Hey, this is John Bollinger with Premier Guitar. We are backstage at the Guns N' Roses show. I'm with McBob, who's been with GNR for 30 years.
30 years in a row.
Jeez, man, that's unbelievable. Yeah. And you are Duff's tech since the very beginning, right?
Yep. Man. Since they actually started really touring.
Yeah, yeah, since they could afford you.
Yeah, about 2 weeks after Appetite came out. So, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Kind of, that's been a rocket ride.
Yeah, a lot of good stories there.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot you can't tell, I imagine. Yeah. But let's tell the ones you can tell. Start with this bass right here.
This is number one on this tour. This has been number one for 4 or 5 years now. It's a Fender Custom Shop, Duff model, Jazz Special, P bass, Jazz neck. A Peabody Jazz neck.
Cool.
And it's a knockoff of his original bass that we keep in storage now.
Yeah, so what is the original?
It was a Japanese model Fender Jazz Special. Huh. Just looks exactly like this, basically.
Really?
And it's one of the first basses he bought after they got their signing bonus.
Yeah.
Bought himself a GK head and a couple cabinets and that bass. And
took over the world.
Yeah, yeah. So. All the rest of them are basically exact copies of that. We'll do a little sticker. Some Duff's a big Prince fan, so.
Sure, and, that's great. And that neck is,
it's,
I mean,
very, very thin at the top.
And very guitarish.
Yeah, so.
And he started as a guitar player, right?
I mean. Guitar, drums, bass, he played it all in punk bands in Seattle. So he's pretty versatile.
Yeah, very cool. And so did this actually predate his signature model, or is this kind of
a. Well, it's a copy of the original one he bought off a guitar center, like $800. It was an $800 bass. So we sent it into Fender. They took all the specs, necks, body, all that.
Yeah.
And everyone that comes off the shelf, I could go down to a Guitar Center right now and get a Duff model off the shelf, put some Rotosound strings on it, and I could do a show with it. Give it a little intonation.
Yeah.
They sound that close to the original.
That's
a really
great.
Simple, straight-ahead bass, and it gets his tone.
Now, what strings are you running, Rotosound?
Rotosound RS-66 LDs.
Huh.
Have been for 30 years now.
Forever. Yeah. Well, that's great. Yeah. And now he switches. Is he mainly on a pick or
mainly on a pick? He's been started going with his fingers in Velvet Revolver era, and is actually really concentrated at home working on his finger picking.
Yeah.
So he'll do probably 20% of the set now, 15 to 20% of the set with fingers now. But he's mainly a pick guy for most of the recognizable Appetite stuff.
It just seems to drive
it. It's a cut, and it fits with the guitars perfectly. Mm-hmm. And
it's just got that edge that pushes it.
It's got the edge, but he can also get when he needs that bottom. It's still there too. So
very cool.
It's a
good
combination.
Well, let's see
that's
the next
one.
That's great.
Number two is really kind of the only other variations we use. It was a. It's a custom shop version of the Fender Aerodyne.
Oh, wow.
So we had to make the body the exact same way as, same material as his normal bass, and had to spec out the neck. And we were using this in Velvet Revolver, and we use it here for a half step with a drop D. It gets a good low.
Cool.
So that's really the only other variation that we use. And the third bass I'll show you is the new prototype coming out
Duff's
model.
Let's see that thing. Man, I love the lining, the outline on that.
When we saw it at a NAMM show or something. He goes, I love the style of that. And
that's all it took.
Yeah. So the guys at Fender asked us if we wanted to do any kind of variation on the Duff model. It's been the same for 8-9 years now.
Right.
It hasn't really changed. They said, if you were going to modify it, add some stuff to it, what would you do? And Duff thought, well, I'd like to have the nice inlays.
Yeah, I love the big blocks. That's
maybe a pick guard.
Cool.
So with this configuration, instead of having the three knobs, I've got the switch here, and just a single volume and tone. That's really the only other difference. Unpainted neck and a hip shot. They'll be coming with the hip shot. Makes it a little more versatile.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But this should be out hopefully sometime. As by summer, I would think that we'd be, and we'll probably come in a black and a white pearl with a black pick guard. So,
yeah, that's great.
Sounds slightly different, but just a little.
Yeah, I wonder if the pick guard makes.
It does make a little bit of difference, but it's not that much. Not that much.
Wow, what a great looking bass. And I love that he just does the hip shot drop if he needs it.
If he needs it, yes.
Yeah, because, it's to me, that's so much more rock and roll than a five string.
Yes.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, that's simple enough.
Yeah.
Now, let's look at that guitar that he's playing and tell the story behind that.
just a nice Gibson J200.
Wow, what you a know? Beauty.
We played on half the half of Patience. The first half he plays acoustic.
Oh, yeah.
Then we'll do a switch over to bass as the song picks up towards the end.
Right.
And
What pickup LR Bags looks like?
It's LR Bags. It was a stock one. I don't remember exactly what model it was, but... Yeah.
Bags pickup, what strings are you running?
The Ernie Ball, got it right here. One second, I might go out of frame here for a second.
Right here in your world?
Yeah.
Oh, good, a visual aid.
Coated strings.
Okay.
These Ernie Ball coated acoustic strings, and they... The coating really makes them last. He's not playing it a whole lot, yeah. But towards the end of the set, you're pretty sweaty.
Yeah.
The coated strings clean up really nice, and if they still
yeah, I bet
sing
you get,
brightly, yeah.
Yeah, I bet you get, like, many
I can
shows.
Get a lot of use out of acoustic that gets played a half a song, so yes.
Half a song. Yeah, okay, that's great. And when he does the switch, do you just run out, handle the bass?
Yeah, it's basically, there's a little break right at the end of Slash's acoustic solo in Patience. And it kind of stops for a second. We do a quick handoff, and then it picks up, and the whole kind of song comes up a little bit. Not rocking, but it just brings it up just a little bit.
Right, when that bottom end comes in.
Yeah.
Go. Okay, awesome.
And that's basically it for the instruments. I've got a couple backups for each that are the same kind of models and whatnot, but that's the basic gist of it.
Very cool. Well, let's talk about amps.
All right,
so now we're in amp land. Kind of take us through the whole signal chain.
Well, it starts here. I have, UHFR wirelesses. I have them in two frequency groups, so this is my main group here, four of them, and this is my backup system right here. In case I run into a day when you're got bad frequencies, I have the option to go to a different frequency chain. Those four roll into my radial JX44. It acts like this is my switcher here between the four wirelesses. It also has a built-in DI, an effects loop, and these are my sends, 1, 2, 3, 4, and number 3 and 4 actually have stereo out, so I'm able to double up on the amps on the outputs.
Oh, great.
And that's basically where the chain starts. It ends up in the first one is the GK MB800, small powerhouse amp, like 800 watts, and weighs like 4 pounds. Love it, love
it. And you said that GK is where he started anyway.
Yeah, GK, this is set as basically his normal tone with the mid-scoop, what you would have heard on Appetite, Illusions.
Yeah,
and then the second chain runs over here to the new Fender Super Bassman. We get the growl. Duff was playing in a band called the Walking Papers a few years ago, and he started playing a little more distorted bass.
Yeah.
So he found it, he liked the tone. It also makes it easier to play with that little bit of a growl in it. It's not as dry. So we're blending the old original GK tone with the Fender Bassman. So it's and we're not running a lot of volume because the cabinets are off stage. Everybody's in ears these days.
Yeah.
So they run to a couple cabinets I have off stage.
And so are you miking the cabinets for front of house?
We're miking the cabinets, one of each, on the 15. I run a 15 for the GK and a 410 for the Super Bassman. So I got two mics there. I take a straight DI out of the radial, and I take a post EQ out of the GK.
Oh, cool.
So I've got four channels going to front of house.
And they kind of mix and match.
Yeah, they blend it. And then some guys want the DI in the ears.
Yeah.
Slash likes hearing the GK, the original tone he's been hearing on stage for all those years.
Right.
And Duff likes the blend of the two in his ears.
Yeah.
No DI, but just the blend of the... So it sounds more like the wood on stage to him in his ears. So.
Right.
And with the new JH Audio Roxanne ears, the bass response on it's amazing. We've got tunable attenuators up to bring up the bass. Really, it sounds like you're standing in front of a rig. So
wow,
it's come a long ways.
God, isn't that amazing? The advances.
Yeah.
I mean, what you've seen.
Oh yeah, the way the technology has advanced. Oh, it's amazing. It's amazing.
Great. Okay, so from this
is
there.
This is my acoustic wireless setup. It's a dual Shure digital rig and a regular UHFR, and I've got four channels of acoustic wireless if need be.
Okay.
And that's basically it. And I use this other GK into a Sans amp. It kind of is my all else fails. If something happened to both of my tube heads, I can run the out of the Sans amp into the GK for power, and I could duplicate kind of the growl that this one gets. So
yeah. Belts and suspenders. You're ready for
I'm on backups for my backups.
Right. And then down here on the floor.
This is my remote to choose between which bass I'm using.
Okay.
Which wireless channel.
Okay.
Duff's really only effect he's ever really used on the bass is a little chorus pedal. You'll hear it in the beginning of Sweet Child of Mine. You know, a lot of songs like that. Yeah. Basically it. I use the EQ on one bass that sounds different than the other two that I had, so.
Yeah, yeah. And the fuel tank.
Powers the whole, powers those pedal board.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Simple.
Straight ahead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Bob, thank you, man.
No worries, my pleasure.
Hey, backstage at the GNR show with Adam Day. Adam, thanks so much for joining us, man.
Thanks for having me.
Nice to see you guys. You are really busy.
We have our moments here, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a long show and a lot going on.
It's a three-hour show, right?
Three and a half.
God.
If you get technical.
God, that's... How many guitars do you go through?
He'll probably play about 15 a show.
Wow.
You know, we've got about... we got about 28 on the road here, and we kind of bring them in and out.
How often do you go between string changes? Because they're not playing them a lot, but...
No, I go about every 8 or 9 songs. Yeah.
He's, wow.
You know, he's tough on everything.
Yeah.
He
sweats
a lot.
And he's hard.
He plays hard, passionately
yeah.
hard.
Yeah.
So, you know, I try to stay ahead of the curve.
And, yeah.
You know, because he'll break strings.
Right. Right. Yeah. Well, let's start with this.
Yeah.
Tell me the whole story on this.
Well, this is a 1987 Standard, and this is one of the first two that Gibson gave him. When he first got his Gibson deal in 87. So this started on the road on the Appetite for Destruction tour.
Wow.
And as you can see, it's served its time. It's been broken several times. It was his main guitar through the Appetite and most of the Use Your Illusion tours as well.
Right. You know? Now, you've been with Slash since for how long now?
I started in 88.
Wow.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, so you and that guitar have a lot of miles.
Yeah, we go back.
So, yeah.
You know, he was playing with Alice Cooper and the cherry fell out of his cigarette, landed right here. He was jamming with Steve Winwood, Nile Rodgers, playing a Hendrix song. And he did one of these neck bends, snapped the neck right in half. The headstock came up and hit him in the face. And the guitar was dangling by its strings. That was a real rock and roll moment there.
Yeah, that is great. That's great. So, okay, besides the repairs of, you know, broken headstocks and such, what else have you done to it? The pickups, are those?
These are his Seymour Duncan Alnico 2 Pros. Pretty much we put in everything, except there's a few that we like the sound of the Gibson pickups in.
Other than that, what other modifications have you made?
There's not much. A couple of them will have select value of tone capacitors.
Mm-hmm.
He'll play with his tone quite a bit, and certain songs need a certain value of tone capacitance.
Yeah.
So other than that, there's not much. You know, he's played so many guitars through the years that
right.
he's used to playing different radius necks, different fret wire. So he's got preferences, but he'll just play anything.
Right.
You know.
That's great.
That works for him.
You know, it's interesting. You ride that bridge up, that stop tailpiece up high, right?
Well, these standards had a greater neck to body angle than the reissues, for one thing. But mainly, I try to keep the bridge from having too much of a break angle.
Oh, okay. That makes
sense. Because he plays so hard here, and if I put this tailpiece down to the right down to the body, he'll be snapping strings before you know it.
Well, I guess that is going to relieve some of that pressure.
Yeah,
that's great. Do you find it tough? Now, during sound check, you have to play, and do you find it difficult playing with the guitar that low, or are you just used to it?
I'm used to it. I can't play everything at that, but I can't play everything anyway. But I play what I need to play.
Yeah.
At this level, so I am used to that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's an amazing bit of rock and roll history.
Yeah.
Well, let's look at its
all right, well,
brother or cousin or whatever.
This is a replica that Gibson did of what they call the Appetite for Destruction guitar.
Yeah.
Which actually was the Appetite for Destruction guitar. It's not actually Gibson. This one is. The original replica was not a Gibson.
That's right. Who made that guitar?
It was a gentleman named Chris Derrick. And he's since passed. But there was a few of these going around. And his manager brought this into the studio during Appetite for Destruction. And the original's got such a unique voice. And he's used it. I've been around for most of the recordings. And that guitar has been on quite a bit.
Yeah.
You know, and so later on, Gibson took this into their own hands. They took the guitar and they modeled it. And he's probably got about a half dozen of these.
Well, how close is it, if you were to A-B them, can you hear a difference?
You know, I haven't A-B'd them in the studio, at least in a long time. I'm sure you'd hear a slight difference.
Yeah.
You know, it's just so hard to replicate the sonics no matter what you do.
Yeah.
You know, you can get the weight of the wood, you can get everything right, but it's not always going to sound identical. And that guitar just has this unique mid-range voice.
Yeah.
That just works.
Sure. Now, at one point, I remember reading, he had that Joe Perry's old, was it 59 Les Paul?
Yeah, it was a 59 Tobacco Burst.
Did he have that out on the road with you?
No, it never went on the road. Got it during Use Your Illusion sessions.
Yeah.
And it made it on a few songs.
Uh-huh.
And once Joe found out Slash had it, he was bugging him to get it back.
Yeah.
As
you would.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it had been floating around, and Slash always loved that because he had a poster of Aerosmith with Joe playing that guitar.
Right, that brown.
So when he had the offer to get it, he got it.
Yeah.
So we used it in the studio. And like I said, it was on several tracks of Use Your Illusion. And at one point, Slash decided to give it to him for his birthday. Give it back to him.
God.
Unbeknownst to him.
Jeez, so, man. That's the most generous gift I've ever heard of. Because, I mean, what's it? It's got to be worth $1 million.
Well, it wasn't then.
It is now.
It is now. That's for sure.
Yeah.
You know, but Slash knew how much it meant to him, and Slash knew what Joe meant to him growing up, and the influence that he put on him, left on him playing the guitar. So
that's beautiful.
that was important to him to get it back to him, I think.
How cool.
Yeah.
Okay, that's a good segue. Let's talk about some other guitars.
Yeah.
Things just got even cooler, if that's possible. Let's hear about this.
Well, this has been refinished in black. It was probably an 88 or 89, as I recall. I have to look at the number again, but this has been around for a long time. It was on Use Your Illusion tour and a lot of his solo stuff.
Right.
And brought it back out for this. And it's mainly used for Knocking on Heaven's Door now.
Oh, that's great. Okay, so what's the setup on Heaven's Door? How are you doing?
Well, he'll go back and forth between the 12 string and the 6 string during the song.
Yeah.
And so when he's up here playing the 12 string, I do the amp switching and whatever sonic changes. I do that during the songs, the show. So when he's playing the 12 string, he'll be going through a pair of clean sounding amps. And so when he switches during the song, he'll switch next and go to this, and I'll switch to a couple other amps, some dirtier sounding amps for this. And so he'll go back and forth during the song. And he's a kind of player who he's so passionate, it's never the same every night. So I have a TV monitor back there where I can watch the front of him so I can keep an eye. Sometimes he'll stay longer here.
So you can anticipate the change.
So I have to anticipate the change, but visually mainly, and sonically I know what he's going to do. If he does a descending line, he'll usually end up back here. But so it can be a little tricky, but it's part of the challenges of the gig.
Yeah, that's great. And other than the paint, anything else changed on this?
No, I believe these, it's been a long time, I believe these may be the Alnico 2s down here, or they may be stock. I don't even remember at this point.
They look played, whatever they are. Yeah. There's been a lot of picks drug across
there's,
those.
There's been a lot of everything on this guitar.
Yeah.
There's a lot of DNA.
Yeah, right.
But it's been a great guitar.
Wow, man. It is so heavy. More than one song would put you in traction.
Yeah.
And that strap is amazing.
What do you think of that?
Yeah. That's great. Okay, very cool. Let's look at this guy over here.
Yeah. All right, so this is a BC Rich bitch. And although he's got a bunch of vintage BC Riches, this was commissioned through BC Rich to his specs, which basically are neck through maple with mahogany wings, mm-hmm. and a curly maple a curly maple cap.
Wow.
And
beautiful.
The maple we find gives it a little bit of brightness, a little definition. Mm-hmm. So sonically it works well for him.
And all these mysterious switches.
Yeah, well, you know, they had a lot going on in the 70s when they designed these. You know,
right.
there was two active preamps. There was coil taps, a Veritone.
Wow.
And of course, it was a 10 string.
Wow.
You know, Slash always loved the look of these. And
when he was a kid, he had one of these. Didn't he have a BC Rich?
He did.
Yeah.
He did. So he's always been fond of these.
Yeah.
So we never use them for 10 string, but they work great for what he uses them for.
Yeah, fabulous. Okay,
yeah.
That is very cool. Okay, so you're touring with a lot of guitars. We can't show them all, but these are some of the sweethearts. Let's hear about this one.
This is a pretty cool one and unique and kind of close to my heart just because this basically is a replica of his original 1958 that he purchased in 1990.
Wow.
And as you can tell, it's pretty beat up. But when he buys a guitar, when he looks at a guitar, whether it's expensive or not expensive, it's got a sound right and it's got a play right to him. It doesn't matter. He doesn't buy it just for the investment. But that being said, he ended up buying this in 1990, and we put it right to work on Use Your Illusion albums. And it originally had a cover on the back pickup, and it was a little bit microphonic, and in 1990 I took it off. And so this is not the original 58. This is a replica that Gibson did within the last month.
Oh, great. Wow.
To exact specs of his original, and distressed, as you can tell. And
right.
They matched everything, and it sounds really good.
Now, do you?
And he's very happy with it.
So, just getting back to the pickup, when you took the top off, did the microphonic thing kind of disappear?
It did, and a lot of times, just because it might be a little bit loose.
Wow.
Any metallic that's loose vibrates and comes through, so it did help.
I've got to do that. That's a great little hack for you out there.
Yeah.
A great way to fix the microphonic.
And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't, but in this case it actually did.
Good place to start.
Yeah.
That's great. Now, what gauge strings do you run?
Right now we've got four different tunings.
Okay, yeah.
And for his regular standard, I'll say standard, but it's actually a half step flat.
Okay.
So that's what most of the stuff is, a half step flat. And these are Ernie Ball 11 to 48s.
Wow, okay.
And then we have other tunings that are standard tuning, and then a standard tuning drop D, and then a half step drop D.
Sure.
And I will gauge those accordingly.
Yeah, just to get them to feel.
Yeah, where I might put a heavier low E on a drop D.
And what picks does he use?
He uses a Dunlop Tortex 1.14.
Oh, okay. So it's
a pretty heavy pick.
Yeah.
Combining that with his attack,
it's
a lot of force.
Yeah, we just watched Soundcheck, and he was killing it, man. Just throwing down. Yeah, it was.
He's having a great time on this tour, and he's playing better than ever.
God, ferocious, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, great. Well, let's get into amp land. All right, now we're in amp land. Let's kind of talk about just the basic signal flow of it.
I'll tell you, first of all, his basic sound on stage is based on four different sends, which is a basic dirty sound, which is probably 80% of the time,
mm-hmm.
a clean sound, a talk box amp send, and an acoustic DI send. And that's what is basically ingrained in this system. But as far as the signal flow, really coming out of the Shure wireless into our RJM switcher.
Okay.
Out of the switcher, it goes into a MXR graphic EQ, which is basically to help get rid of some of the high end of the wireless.
Oh, okay.
Out of that, it basically goes, it'll go into a noise gate, get rid of some of that front end hiss of the wireless, and from there it'll go into the rack mount wah system. And this is all in front of everything.
Okay.
After that, it'll go back into the bottom RJM, which has all the instant access ins and outs. So basically, whatever effects are all on those sends on that. After that, it comes out of that and it comes back up to the other RJM where all the sends for the amps and the DI send out of. And it goes basically, the dirty sound is basically two, right now it's two redundant mono amps running together.
And that's actually just these cranked Marshalls are providing that dirt sound.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. Great.
And they're feeding two separate isolation boxes down underneath the stage.
Okay, so ISO are like 412 cabs?
412s in boxes.
Oh, okay.
In long isolated boxes,
wow.
Mic'd up.
So you've got a full Marshall 412 down there, boxed up.
Yeah, we've got four boxes down there.
Wow, that's amazing.
So
how big are those boxes?
They're 6 feet long by 3 feet.
Wow,
3 by 6.
A lot of real estate. Yeah. Okay, yeah.
So that's the dirty sound, which, like I said, is 75-80% of the time.
Yeah, and which are they? Is that the JCM?
This is basically these are actually the vintage Jubilees from 1987. Actually, these were on the Appetite for Destruction tour.
How cool. And those amps have been with you this whole time. That's great.
Yes, they were retired for some time, and we brought them out of retirement for this tour. This is actually a reissue of that model, which is a 2555. There's a reissue slash signature model.
Great.
Which basically is voiced the same as these Jubilees.
Sure, okay, cool.
And those all have EL34 output tubes. And as far as the clean sound goes, we have some more vintage Jubilees we use. And those have been modified with KT88 output tubes and an AT7 preamp tube and a phase inverter, which basically pads it a little bit.
Okay.
And that seems to work well. We've been using those for clean for some time as well.
Wow. Yeah. So on any given gig, how many Marshalls are you actually running? Between the talk box, the clean, the dirty?
There's six going all the time.
Wow. That's, yeah.
I'm switching between clean, dirty, talk box.
And you're doing all those switches here?
I do it all here. That's one of the benefits of being together for so long. We have a chemistry and... he's, as I mentioned, he's such a passionate player that he plays different every night.
Yeah.
So one time we might go from a solo slide into a clean part or on the downbeat. It's just, you never know with him.
Right.
So I'm listening and I'm watching on the monitor to see what he's doing. So it's always an adventure.
Wow, that's amazing. Now on the stage, there are no cabs, but how is he getting that feedback? Because during soundcheck, he's using it kind of whenever he, where you, how are you doing that?
Yeah, well, it's a process we kind of employed way back in the day in the recording studio. He hates playing with headphones, so basically he will re-record everything that he's done in the live room. He'll re-record it in a control room.
Oh, okay.
So he can use the playback speakers. Now, we have an issue with that on getting feedback.
Sure.
Because they're full range, short throw speakers that don't actually project the true frequencies and tone of a guitar cabinet feedback.
Right.
So we kind of came up with this idea where we wide out to a combo amp that we actually have in the control room mounted about pickup height in front of the console and on a volume pedal. And when he wants feedback, we would kick that volume pedal in. It would engage the combo amp and send feedback back into his pickup, back to the mic cabinet.
Wow, what a great way to do it.
And that worked pretty well. There's a slight bit of latency in that process, but it worked out well. So we're basically employing that same technique here. We have one hidden 4x12 here that's being powered by a separate power amp and being controlled on a volume pedal as well.
Oh, that's amazing. Okay.
So when he wants feedback, and I know when that is, he'll turn around or he'll find a sweet spot, and I'll engage that, and that's the only time that cabinet will be live. You know, but it does the same thing. It's really loud, and it sends the feedback right back into his pickup, into the mic cabinet in the ISO boxes.
Wow.
So, that's kind of the way we got around it, this being the first time he's ever played live with in-ear monitors.
And not the cabs right behind him.
Yeah, and no cabinets. So that was one of the issues we had to try to figure out, you know. And seems to be pretty happy with it, so it's working out fairly well.
Yeah, what an ingenious plan.
It's just one of those things. It works for us.
So it sounds like pretty much the signal is... It sounds like just Les Paul and Marshall for the most part, but there's every now and then some effects.
Yeah.
And you're triggering them back here?
Yeah, they're all being controlled by this Voodoo Labs Ground Control Pro.
Oh, great.
But that was the whole idea of the system. That was always Slash of Sound. It was a Les Paul and Marshall, and that's basically what you hear most of the time.
Yeah.
However, there are certain points in the set, in the show, that he wants a little something extra. Like a lot of times there's... delay in his solos. So we've got a few different delays going.
Oh yeah, so what they're in the rack there?
Yeah, so in this effects rack here, like we've got a couple Boss delays here. These two are actually in the effects loop of these two heads, in the effects loop, as well as these line drivers that I can activate for a cleaner boost.
Okay.
So those two are actually in the effects loop, and the only things that are in the effects loop. The rest of a small amount of things we do have are all in separate loops that are in front of everything.
Okay.
We have a line driver boost overdrive from MXR that we use a lot of solos on. Just a regular MXR chorus on some of the clean stuff. Another digital delay. This one is set. This one basically is the beginning of Welcome to the Jungle. We have an MXR octave fuzz that's used pretty much right now. It's just used on part of the solo of Paradise City.
Oh, okay, cool.
So stuff just really comes in and out.
Yeah. Yeah, subtle little bits here and there, but for the most part, it's just that.
He uses the wah quite a bit. And then a couple other older Line 6 kind of utility pieces, but I use this Mod Pro for flanger on one song. And the Echo Pro has got a couple delay settings for a couple things here or there. So it's just a few things that come in and come out.
Sure.
But like I said, the beauty of the system and the whole idea was to have transparent, have his sound transparent, yet give us the versatility we need with the different sounds, the clean, the dirty, the talk box, and the acoustic, which has to be switched in and out when he does the song Civil War with his double neck.
Yeah.
So that's really the bulk of it there.
Yeah, yeah. Cal, that's killer. Well, man, I can't thank you enough for taking us through this this rig.
It's my pleasure.
Amazing.
My pleasure. Great having you guys out.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Backstage, shortly before the Guns N' Roses show, I'm with Richard Fortus. Richard, thanks so much for joining us.
Man, it's my pleasure. Man. So nice to meet you finally.
Yeah, right. I've been a fan of your playing for a really long time.
Thank you very much. I've been a fan of yours as well.
Oh, man. Well, that's nice of you to say, but... Yeah.
And we've been trying to do this for like the last 2 years.
That's right. Well, we've got some mutual friends. We've been talking back and forth. We're both guitar geeks, as you might have guessed. So, yeah, mutual passion. Well, let's talk about this Gretsch.
This is, I just got this from Chicago Music Exchange. Just bought this, and
wow.
It's a Stephen Stern. And
wow.
It's my first Stephen Stern.
No, I'm not into it at all.
The custom shop stuff. This was a one-off that he did, a one of a kind. And I saw photos of it and flipped out. I was like,
wow.
Man, I gotta have that. So we were just in Chicago, so I picked it up and threw Arcane pickups in it.
Those Arcane pickups, that's really your thing.
Yeah. I really, they're Filtertrons I love.
But it's kind of unique to this gig, right? Because you've got your own, you gotta find your own sonic space with Slash.
Yeah, as we were talking about, it's the Filtertrons really sit around Slash's tone really nicely, you know, because his tone is very mid-focused and thick,
right?
You know, and this is bright with a lot of low-end thump to it, and the Filtertrons, and they really just sort of envelop what he's got going on, and it really is separate, which is cool.
Yeah, it's great just hearing soundcheck out front and hearing the way you both cut in very different places. It's great.
So I'm excited about the Gretsches have been working great for.
Yeah, it's funny, they're making better guitars than ever. Gretsch really is.
The Player's Edition stuff
is
fantastic.
Yeah.
I love these. I've got a
let's see it.
A couple of Falcons here. This is my main one.
Right.
I have a black one and a white one. And man, the Player's Edition with the string through Bigsby.
Right.
And the tuners are great. They stay in tune, fantastic.
And that's your change, right?
Yeah, because otherwise when you've got a low, it's...
Yeah.
Yeah,
you're definitely a low rider.
Yeah. It's pretty... I end up breaking my thumb, so...
And now, right there, too, you've changed that... Did you change that out?
No, that's original.
Okay, that's great.
Yeah, that's their... and it's pinned as well.
Oh, yeah, that's a huge difference. Yeah.
The old ones. Yeah. I used to play I toured with a 66 for a while, and I would actually knock the saddle completely out. It'd
right.
just be out of the guitar. But
very cool.
Yeah.
Okay, so the Gretsches, very cool.
Yep, and I've got, four Gretsches in total.
Great.
That I used during the show. And then the Scalas, which...
Let's see those.
Let's see. This is a really cool one that I designed.
Wow.
It's this guy, Leo Scales, out of L.A., and he makes the most incredible custom guitars I've ever come across. This was based on it's sort of a 335 vibe, but it's a mahogany back that's chambered with a maple cap. So it's more like a Les Paul, but it's incredible sounding.
Yep.
And these are actually, they're Arcanes, but they're Alnico 8s with very few windings. It's a very strong magnet, but very few windings. So there's a lot of clarity to the pickup. It's a lower output, you know, high 7s.
Yeah.
And check this out. He does this thing where he has this insert that goes into the end of the tailpiece, and it extends the lower strings, so there's more tension on the low strings and less tension on the high strings. If you look...
What a great idea.
Yeah, and this is even cooler. He makes different ones out of different materials, so there might be a brass one, there might, you know, and you can get it, which you'd be shocked at how much it changes the tone.
Wow.
But yeah, so that's that one.
That love that kind of detail. When we were talking, well, before this, we were talking about pots and things like that, and I mean, you were very involved in every ingredient.
Yeah, man, we go through. Leo, God bless him, man, he's so patient. Because I'll go through so many pickups. Just on like some of these, we went through like 6 or 7 pickups before we found what really worked for that guitar.
So you're putting it in the guitar, plug in, play into it.
Yeah, it's not happening.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then you have to go back, you know, and try something else. And every guitar is different. So, you know, the Gretsch is like, one might sound great in one grudge, it doesn't sound good in the other. So, yeah.
It's the tone chase, man.
So, we were just talking about the original broadcaster.
Right.
When Leo Fender.
This is some cool guitar geekery. Tell them.
So, the original pickups were for the original Telecaster or the broadcaster, right?
Yeah.
Was I actually have a 51 Nocaster.
Really?
And they were, those were lap steel pickups, right? And so that's what these are based on. These are also arcanes, but that's what they are based on. And there's two bridge pickups.
Oh, that's great.
Okay, and then we reverse the angle.
Right, which is so the way to go.
It really is. Yeah. If you're a Tele player, man, in Strats too, I also have, Trussart made me this killer Strat that where the bridge pickup is angled backwards.
Yeah, it's so like weird. Left
hand. Hey, there's a reason Hendrix sounded the way.
right, absolutely. It's weird that Leo made that decision because it seems...
It seems counterintuitive. It just seems wrong, right?
Yeah, man, you want more high-end there and less there. But
exactly.
That's how he did it. He had a 50-50 chance because the pickup was too long and he put it the wrong way.
Right. That's right. That's exactly right. So, extend left-handed headstocks on Teles or on Strats.
Totally.
Always.
Yeah, man, that's great. All that and, long string.
Yeah, more tension on the low end, so you get that piano thing, that Hendrix thing again. Yeah. You know, and it's brighter because of the angle of the pickup.
Man, I love that. So two, basically lap steel pickups.
Yeah.
In this.
And all is a, four position. Because all the way up is parallel.
Okay.
Man, I love this guitar. Maple cap again on a mahogany body. And also, well, I forgot to mention that these are chambered.
Oh.
And they're vented.
Oh, that's great.
So the maple only touches in key points around the body.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is it light?
It's not super light, but man,
no, not
it's
super light.
Got... It's so, they're alive sounding. They're very resonant. They have so much mojo to them.
Well, and what was that kind of Les Paul shaped one you were playing?
Yeah, I'll show you.
That was very cool.
A couple of them. Let's see. Oh, this is my Burst.
Yeah.
This one is just, it's magical.
I saw you play that in a Supro demo.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I thought, God, that's. Right.
Yeah, and again, same thing. It's the mahogany with the vented, and the maple only touches in key points, and this guitar is the best sounding Les Paul I've ever heard.
That's an amazing guitar,
including the original Burst that I've played. This is absolutely. I know that's hard to believe, but
I know, and it's so light. Maybe that's what makes it so resonant.
They have mojo to them, man.
Yeah.
And they're the only new guitars that have that I've found.
He personally making every guitar himself?
Yeah,
is it like that small
of a
deal? Wow.
Yeah.
That's great.
And he's not as expensive as he should be.
Okay, good to know.
And then I've got a few of those. This one is like a custom.
Oh, wow.
Like a Les Paul custom where it's got the ebony.
Oh, yeah, great.
It's also scalloped up top just
a little bit.
But just a little bit. And man, attention to detail is unparalleled. I've never come across any other builder that puts so much love in every guitar. It's just phenomenal.
Well, I love the aesthetic of the whole thing. It just looks great.
Yeah. But sonically, they're amazing.
Awesome.
And then this one is all ash.
Oh, wow.
And we went through quite a few pickups on this. But this is in drop D. I've only played on a couple of songs.
Now, what gauge strings are you running? What brand and gauge?
NYXLs, D area, which are you hip to those?
Yeah. Oh. They're great. Yeah, I love
fantastic
them.
Strings.
Yeah.
Really just blown away by how great they are. 10 to 52.
Yeah. Good. Wow, that's a heavy bottom. Yeah.
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 But, I mean, for this, I use it for all my gigs, actually.
Yeah. It's great.
And then I've got one baritone, which actually you should see.
Yeah, let's see this.
It's made by...
I like that.
made by a company called G Sharp. Small company, but man, these are so killer sounding. With these are actually Lawler pickups, gold foils.
It's and like a George Jetson guitar.
It's total Tysco vibe, yeah. Right?
Yeah, but pawn man,
shopper. It, yeah. And this headstock's great too.
Yeah.
Because it's three on a side, but.
Oh yeah. That's right. Oh.
But it's great because you have the extended.
Yeah.
And I only play this on a couple of songs, but it's a.
Well, do you know what the body is made of?
It's, I think it's an alder body.
Huh. Wow, what a great weirdo guitar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really great sounding baritone. And they record great. Wait, do we get all the guitars?
There's one more.
Couple more. This one was made by Phil Kaliten.
Oh wow. How
and
cool.
Just a single pickup 335. And killer guitar.
We're really talking about stuff. The magic of single coil or single pickups.
Yeah.
We share a mutual theory on this, why juniors sound so good, and that one pickup doesn't have the magnet from the other, you know, from the neck
right.
jacking with it.
It fights it.
Yeah.
You know, Phil X is a big proponent of this as well. That with, we were talking about like how, why specials never sound as good as juniors.
Yeah, juniors, but, yeah.
And you know, Malcolm Young, I mean, that whole thing about where the neck pickup fights the vibrations because it's a drag on the string.
Yeah.
So it rings truer with one pickup.
Like an Esquire. Sound different than Kelly's.
Esquire sound, I agree completely.
Yeah. Okay, that's cool. Hey, and what is this weirdo over here?
Man, this guy from Brooklyn, it's a Carbonetti. And he made this for me, and this thing sounds great. It's actually a cedar top.
Wow.
And single Filtertron, which is also an Arcane.
Great.
And man, it.
I mean, it's very alive.
Great. It is, it's very cool sounding.
Yeah, with that cedar top?
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
But that's pretty much it for guitars. And then my Guild acoustic.
Yeah.
The new Guilds.
Oh, they're great.
They're great.
Yeah.
Really, really beautiful sounding.
This is kind of like the golden age of guitars. There are a lot of people making
there
amazing
are some, yeah, there's some guitars. Really cool stuff out there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. Okay, well, let's talk about amps.
All right, amplifiers.
Yes.
This is a custom amp that was done for me by Voodoo.
Oh.
Voodoo amps I've been working with for years. I bought a 73 Jose modded 100 watt Marshall from Mick Mars.
Oh, really?
When I just joined GNR, this is like 2002 probably, and I was buying a bunch of Marshalls at the time, and a buddy of mine said, oh, my buddy Mick's selling a bunch. He wasn't doing anything. He just had like a surgery and he needed to, Motley Crue wasn't doing anything. And so we went over to his house, played through all these vintage, hot-rodded.
That would be really fun.
It was super cool. And man, we plugged into about a dozen. I plugged into this one, and it just, like the clouds parted and angels sang, and it just hit a chord, and it was like, oh. And I was like, man, this is incredible. He's like, yeah, that's my number one amp. It's the one I did all the albums with. And I was like, well, man, you gotta keep that. Yeah. He was like, nah, if you think you're taking advantage of me, you're not. You're helping me out. It's like,
wow.
I don't need it right now.
Good for you, man. So, good for him. That's great.
I toured with that amp for a few years, and I was so afraid that something was going to happen to that amp.
Oh, right.
And so I started having people try and clone it.
Yeah.
Which was difficult. I had a bunch of different amp builders.
Yeah.
Some big names that tried to clone it and trace from Voodoo amps meticulously every capacitor, he really did it right and nailed it. Completely. The thing is about that amp, it had a very high plate voltage, the transformer. So cloning the transformer was a big part of it. So then we actually started tweaking and tweaking, and it actually beat the Marshall. And then
fabulous.
And then over the years, I mean, this has been, what, 15 years in the making. Wow. So this is what we ended up with.
That's great. And so are you running two or is one a backup?
One's a backup.
Okay.
So it's just one running through a single 412 cab with Celestion 65s and golds in an X pattern.
Buried like under the stage way back then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then that's it. It's a single channel amp. And man, I was telling you before, I have not ever been so happy with my rig as I am. It's very simple.
Yeah.
Just I'm rolling down my volume for the clean sound. And then, you know, finding that just constantly on the volume.
Right, that's where you get like all the nuance, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. And we were talking about before, like, Slash and I both constantly on our volumes, like constantly just, you know, you're looking for that sweet spot for what you're doing at that moment, you
right.
know? Yeah. And also going back and forth between our fingers and our pick. And it's that, those subtleties that, you know, Jason and I were talking earlier about, you know, he's tech for a lot of different bands, and a lot of people are using the Fractals and the Kempers. Right. The problem with those for this gig, it would never work. And we tried, but because of the volume thing, when you drop, and also the nuances of your fingers,
right.
you don't get that.
Yeah.
It's that. That expressiveness is gone.
Yeah.
And so this, I think, and I'm a big fan of the Kemper and the Fractal.
Yeah, taking nothing away from that. There's a place for it.
Absolutely.
But.
And if I was doing the Metallica gig or the Muse gig or like where you've got your heavy sound and your clean sound, you know, it would be great.
Yeah.
And for a pop gig, it's ideal, you know? Or like Nine Inch Nails or something where you're changing tones all the time.
But this is not
Is not that gig.
Yeah.
This is not that gig.
So running this one backup with the 412 and then you've got a secondary.
I've got the Supro Black Magic.
That's great.
Just a single 12. I know they make the head now too, but I'm just using the combo with Alnico Creamback.
Oh yeah.
That is killer in that amp.
Yeah, those sound killer. Well, okay, so your signal flow, you're going from your Shure wireless.
Right.
And it's,
going into the switcher down here, the RJM.
Okay.
And then there's two boards. There's my text board and then the redundant board out there.
Now, you're doing most of your changes yourself, are you? It kind of depends.
It depends, yeah.
Was that hard to do, give up control of your
pedals? Used to that years ago.
Really?
yeah.
Okay.
Because it's not, these changes are so subtle.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know, a compressor here or maybe an overdrive
pedal
there.
And your guy's on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's very on it. Yeah.
That's but, great.
Well, talking about pedals.
Yeah, let's.
So first I go into the, the Schaefer.
Okay.
Are you hip to those?
No.
The Schaefer, okay, which is the Solo Dallas.
Oh,
is making them. Okay.
No, wait a minute. I literally just did a first look
at
that.
Oh, that's right. I saw it. I saw it. You did the pedal, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so this is okay.
This is the tower. But what they did is they took two towers and put them in a rack for me because I have to have a backup.
Yeah.
Because that's like integral to my sound now. Like it's become like really important to my tone.
Wow, isn't that crazy?
Man,
yeah.
It's amazing what that thing does.
Yeah.
It just, and it's so subtle, but it just shifts the mid-range and gives everything teeth, you know?
Yeah, yeah, it's funny, when I was messing with it, I couldn't really tell what it was doing, I just liked it better what it was on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, there's a tiny bit of compression, it makes things funner to play, makes it easier to play, you know, and but it's still expressive. It's still
really expressive. Like roll down your volume, and it gives you all that okay, that's cool.
So I kick that in and out for heavier sounds. Like when I go to my clean sound, I just take that out and roll my volume down.
Yeah.
And then, okay, so going through the drawers, I've got the Crybaby remote wah, right?
Okay, yeah. Rack here, controller up there.
And, okay, so starting, we've got the Joe Gora.
Joe Gora Premier Guitar.
Your associate.
Yeah, one of our colleagues.
I love Joe.
Yeah.
Not only is he a mad scientist, he's an incredible guitar player. Yeah. But he made this germanium fuzz called the Colt, which is really badass.
Yeah.
This is the Sacred Cow, which is like a Klon.
Yeah, I reviewed that pedal. They're great.
I really like that. Yeah. And I was using Klons for a while, years ago. That was my main thing, and I like this better.
Oh, yeah. And way less expensive and way... Yeah, that's great.
And then the Love Pedal Eternity has been... we did a shootout with every boutique pedal we could find years ago, and that's the pedal that just works the best for me as far as pushing a Marshall or a big amp, you know, for driving a already driven amp and retaining clarity. And there's just so much definition in a chord, you know, and I use it for, that's like my solo pedal, you know. The Vivider is made by what's it called? Can you read that?
I cannot read it.
Salvation Audio.
Okay.
That's who does it. And it's based on the Mutron octave pedal.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
Tracks incredibly well. And you heard it quite a bit in soundcheck probably. Yeah. I use that pedal a lot. The Cali 76 by Origin is my the greatest compressor ever made for guitar. Yeah.
I've got the huge one, but
I have that
so
one too.
Big.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't use it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes way more sense.
I love this thing.
Yeah.
And the old Arion stereo chorus.
Right? Those are great, man.
All the way up, everything cranked, right?
Yeah.
And I used it on the Chinese Democracy album.
Oh,
so
cool.
I had to have it, and I've got it was modified. It's like a true bypass.
Oh, cool.
And then
when you, on Chinese Democracy, was it modified then, or was it?
No.
Okay.
No.
Yeah, just.
It was,
noisy and the whole mess.
Yeah.
Sounds great.
And then same with the DOD envelope filter.
Oh, yeah.
That's an old FX25 that nothing else sounds like it.
It's just,
and I used it a lot on that album. And so, need to have it. And an old script logo Phase 90.
Oh, great. Great. And Voodoo Labs powering all that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then this stuff all goes to the effects loop of the Voodoo.
Okay.
The Supro is dry.
Okay. Wow. Dry.
Yeah. So, have you heard this, the Bellapock?
Actually, we did a first look video of this thing too. It's great.
Okay, I love EP3s.
Yeah.
I'm a huge EP3 fan. I've got a collection of them. That is absolutely the best EP3 clone I've heard.
Yeah, it's got that out of control, don't know what it's going to do kind of thing.
It does, but at the same time, you know what I love about that? That nobody has effectively recreated until this is, it has that magic thing where it sits around your tone.
Yeah.
You know, where it doesn't.
Yeah, it's a good way to put it. Yeah.
You know, it doesn't muddy everything up.
Yeah.
Whereas a lot of analog delays and digital, they murky everything, they just gets mushy and.
Yeah.
This really doesn't get in the way and sits around everything.
Very musical.
I love it. Yeah. I love it. I'm so happy with this. And that's by Catlin Bread. They also make the Adneco, which is like an oil, based on an oil candle.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And that is my clean tone. It's got this beautiful shimmer and warble to it that is, you can adjust the viscosity of the oil.
Oh, I love that.
It's a really cool company.
That is a cool company.
And then I've got a Timeline. Strymon Timeline.
Sure.
The Talisman is is by Catlin Bread as well, and that's like a plate reverb.
Okay.
And I really lush and rich sounding.
Yeah.
And again, it doesn't muddy things up too much.
Yeah.
Then a whammy pedal I use on a couple of songs. The MXR reverb gets used very little, but
Now, when you're changing, are you changing like scenes or putting pedals on and off mainly? Or is it a little bit of both?
It's a little bit of both. Yeah. Where I used to do different scenes for every song.
Yeah.
But there was a lot more switching. Now it's mostly on this bank.
Yeah.
And then he'll punch or I'll punch effects on and off.
Yeah. Have your main bank and then just kind of season to taste. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great, man.
Yeah. So it's pretty simple, but man, I'm so happy with it.
Yeah, it's, you know, really, I mean, it looks more overwhelming than it is.
Yeah. I mean, it really, I could do this with a pedal board and
right.
But it's just with the big stages and all.
Yeah. I mean, out front, it's just, your tone is just killer. And man, you're
That's
just
great.
A world-class slaying
thank
player.
You very much.
Well, man, I can't thank you enough. I
man,
know you
my
got a
pleasure.
Show.
Yeah,
so,
the doors are open now.
Yeah, doors are open. We're coming in. But look, till next time, thanks very much.
Thank you very much.
Don't forget to sign up for PG Perks, your all-access pass to exclusive gear giveaways and discounts on PremierGuitar.com.